Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy and I are doing our back-to-school special, which which is not exactly discussing summer reading. It's going through the alphabet and off top, you know, essentially off top of head, what's the food item that it conjures up? And let's get ourselves thinking and prepared for cooking this autumn, right?
Mm-hmm.
And drinking.
Exactly.
So we had just completed eel and eggplant. So how about
fava bean?
Fava.
My favorite.
Are they?
I love
fava beans. Is that your favorite bean?
I love fava beans. They're definitely my favorite. I love Crowder peas and I love black-eyed peas, but I like Crowders better than black-eyed peas for their flavor profile, and I love butter beans.
I see your fava, but I raise you flageolet.
That's fine. I like favas better, but I get it.
Favas are a little more bitter and nutty, but they're great.
Mm-hmm.
I do love them.
And I really love lentils, too, but they're dried, so that's
all right, so fava beans. Well, my F was actually, I think, a very underrated fish. It wasn't actually flageolet, but since we were on beans.
Fluke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really beautiful fish.
Can be very, very good.
Incredible when you get a really fresh fluke right out of the water. The raw fish is amazing, and there are a bunch of different things that you can do with it. I've made it a couple of times just at home when I've gotten like one pretty fluke, an involtino, or almost like what looks like a sushi, where you cut the little fillet of the fluke and fill it with whatever the stuffing, whatever you'd like it to be. And it could just be breadcrumb and herbs. It can be sticky rice and vegetables. It can be peppers and carrots. It can be all kinds of things. But just rolling that tight. And that with the sauce is a fantastic thing. But fluke is very underrated. It's great for carpaccio, great for tartare. All right, so G-roll.
I
also did G-roll. I couldn't think of a thing I like better than G-roll.
Oh, I know. Well, we do both love them. I mean, they're just the most beautiful mushrooms.
I mean, you get them, what, once a year, maybe June?
Well,
end of May,
truly,
June.
I really only have had them in France.
Yeah, exactly.
So
a couple of different places in France.
They're so gorgeous. One time we were at La Louis and you asked for a side of them. Oh, my God.
I asked for a side. They bring out a... Yeah. It's La Louis, so they bring out a copper pan.
Yes.
Probably 2 kilos of.
Oh my gosh! I mean, it cost a fortune too. It's like, wait a minute, you guys.
It was only 105 euros.
Oh yeah, it's like no one could eat all of these, but they were so.
I was like, thanks, fellas.
Good.
Thank you.
Didn't we have Côte de Bœuf? We were having Côte de Bœuf, weren't we? I think.
Well,
right. So that's.
If it's the end of May, it's Côte de Bœuf and Girol and La Louis.
So good.
Place your orders for next year.
They're gorgeous. So that's a good G.
Just know that at least the exchange is better this year.
I also said gooseberries, which are also inherently French. We don't really use them that much in American cooking, unless they're French guys or girls here cooking.
I think it's one of those exotic fruit went to France and the French adopted it so much because they use it so much as a garnish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't exactly know when it got from South Africa to France, but it does seem like the French put them on a million.
Or yeah.
Especially like in the late 90s and early 2000s, they're on a million plates.
They were. And they're good. Yeah. They're good. I like it when they're candied.
In the end, I was going to say
there's a lot of seed in there, though. So
the gooseberries don't tickle me as much.
Tiny bit turned off by them. I like the flavor of the fruit.
I think they're
very
like
pretty.
I like tart things, but okay. How about H?
Habanero and honeydew, which I was thinking when I wrote it down. I'm like, wow, those two might actually go together.
That could be kind of cool.
Yeah, it could be really fun to make a honeydew salad and put habanero peppers in. Yeah, obviously they're very spicy, so you want to use a tiny bit, but make
You need to make a great simple
vinaigrette.
Syrup or something to be part of that vinaigrette.
Mm-hmm. Well, or just citrus. I mean, I love lime juice with honeydew. And
habaneros have that little like funny floral thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that simple syrup could have a little bit of a floral character.
That would be fun.
And be
really
one third
cold. You know, dice the cucumber into like just a perfect large dice, and have this amazing vinaigrette with habanero and the lime and simple syrup, and have cracked black pepper on the honeydew, and just cold. That could be so good. What's your H?
I put Hermitage.
I like that H.
Yeah. Well, okay. 200 years ago in France, the most expensive wine was white, and it was the white wine from Hermitage, and that was considered the longest-lived wine in France at that time. And if you look at all the documents from the markets, I know that was Thomas Jefferson's favorite wine. Was red Hermitage has become like the big deal, but I've always felt like white Hermitage has been the sleeper, and remains a sleeper. There's, Jay Miller always tells a story about Burns Steakhouse, and for over like a 20-year period, going back and buying bottles of 30-year-old, you know, various vintage white Chav Hermitage.
Wow.
For, you know, $40 a bottle or $60 a bottle or something ridiculous like that. And these great big, dry but earthy, robust, somehow nutty, and the aroma is a little bit like honeysuckle, but there's a firmness to it and a power. It's an interesting and very complex
Hermitage.
sort of a thing. Having had some of the wines, I guess probably right around age 65, 70, it's not like they're in great years that they die anytime soon.
Who are some of your other favorite producers besides Chav?
Well, the thing that's happened is that the pricing of the wines has gone crazy, especially for someone like Chav, who forever was very reasonable. I think a pretty good sleeper is Domaine Remisier. That is a father-daughter team, and they do a very good job, white and red, and they're touchable price-wise for sure. Gigal is the famous house, and an easier one than many to find, and not the fancy bottling, but the regular bottling of White Hermitage is pretty darn fairly priced for the quality of it.
Specific years?
You have good years recently. I mean, 10 is very strong. 11 is strong also. 13 is lousy, like most of France. That's the thing that...
And that was because of bad weather?
Yeah, it was just a wet and it was English weather in a French countryside, you know? All right, let's move on to I. What do you have?
Italian tomato and Italian parsley. That was a hard one. I'm trying to think of other food besides fruits and vegetables, so now that I understand the...
See, I have a trio of... See, I have a couple little trios on my alphabet here. I have three sort of obscure-ish wine things. This one is the Isarco Valley. And the Isarco Valley is the very best valley in the Dolomites, in the Alto Adige, for growing the really vibrant white wines of the Alto Adige, which are probably the most interesting to drink on a regular basis of Italy. Italy, you know, there's an ocean of interesting red wine from a lot of places, but you kind of have to go to higher elevation, and you need a different kind of growing season for a lot of whites, especially whites to be big and fresh and aromatic. And the Isarco Valley is that best piece. And the price difference to get whites from there versus the rest of the Alto Adige, not big. But it's right up near the Austrian border, and there's just some remarkable... Abbazia della Novacella is up there. Käferhof is up there. They might be the best grower of white wine in Italy. And that, even there's like very old-fashioned grapes like Müller-Thurgau, tremendous. Pinot Grigio, tremendous. And this is not Aunt Myrna's Pinot Grigio, which is the light, you know, sort of like semi-flavorless lemon water business. This is big, rich... dry, long, for food, Pinot Grigio. That's, you know, but that Sauvin or Kerner, which is a remarkable grape that you see up in that area also. But Isarco Valley is what I put down.
Okay. Jay.
And what have you got?
Jerusalem artichokes, which I love.
That's smart.
I love those so much. Yeah. And even if it's something as simple as peeling them, slicing them almost paper thin, and frying them. I mean,
it's one of my favorite French food words. Is the translation of that topinambour?
Yeah, that is a good word. I love that.
As opposed to Jerusalem artichoke or sunchoke.
Sunchokes.
A marketing term. Sunchoke.
Yeah, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it sounds a little bit.
Yeah, sunchokes, Jerusalem artichokes, really great. And you can, you know, make it as a vegetable. You can blanch it, roast it. Different things to
they're
it.
They're the best little chips in the world.
That's why I said that's really what comes to mind first. Love them fried.
Tiny glasses with tiny sips of wines, and
they're
these,
so
and
good.
These little tiny slivers of a fried Jerusalem artichoke. All right, and I put down. Here's my other obscure wine one, Jurançon, and it's another mountain valley, and it's another white wine, and it's down in the Basques part of France. And on the way up into the mountains where you see the sheep standing at like 45-degree angles. And you wonder, how is it the sheep grow without one leg being much longer than the other?
After all
Or do they switch like every 10 minutes? You know, so they don't have this like one giant, like the right legs are giant and the left legs are like little and really weak, you know. Mm. But on the way up, you just drive up and up and up and up. And the vineyards are, at these big altitudes, and like just like dropped in the middle of forest in the Pyrenees, and the whites are from, you know, Petit Mansang and Gros Mansang. That the fact that there are two grapes named Mansang should tell you something about how incredibly important and hard to pronounce the rest of the language is. But these are whites of big personality, big phenolics, meaning that grape material is really dense, and big acidity. They can handle all kinds of food. Let's do quick K, L, M, N. What have you got?
K is kumquats, which I bet a lot of people really don't know what to do with. And frankly, I haven't worked with them too much, but I remember my chef in Charleston when I worked in South Carolina. It was the first time I'd ever seen kumquats because they grow there. My parents had a kumquat tree in their backyard, so it was really easy to get them.
It's a funny little soft citrus fruit.
They are funny. There's very little, you know, to the inside of the fruit. There's a lot of rind and there's a lot of seeds. My suggestion is you make preserves with them, and it really is a beautiful thing. Or you could make a sorbet or an ice cream with them, where you would, you know, cook them down for some time and just work the flavor out of them, and then either freeze that or preserve it.
My K goes back to the Dolomites, and it's knödel.
Oh, yes. That's
something between a gnocchi and a dumpling.
And a lot of different versions.
Yeah, and simple and knödel. Fantastic.
And that's another fun one to
say. Knödel. It's also, yeah, if you say it, you have to, like, be wearing those funny shorts and have your hands on your hips. Knödel.
And sing.
Okay. Well, you could sing, I guess. Mm-hmm. You're running out on the mountainside with your knödels.
Leeks, lemon, limes.
Yeah, I put lemon. Yeah. What is more important than a lemon?
Not much. Right? I love lemon and lime. I do.
It's incredible.
So much
you come back
both.
To.
Yeah.
I'm so fussy about the quality of the lemon, like looking at the stem of the things and smelling the oil and the particular peels, and is there enough flesh, and is it, you know, like. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal.
And you can do so many things with leeks.
M.
I said Meyer lemon and mission figs and mango and mushrooms, which mushrooms is his own gigantic category.
It's like saying cars.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. For a cook, that's like saying cars.
Mm-hmm.
The figs. I have the most irritating wine term of all time. Malolactic fermentation.
Oh, right.
That I will not describe
on
this program.
Yeah, the waiters all kind of glaze over when you start to sit
It's
up.
Really not that hard to understand. But but it really is. It's like it's sort of like you could have a description of malolactic fermentation recorded and pull it out, and when some mugger jumps up, you just play it and they'll just kind of like melt in a puddle on the sidewalk.
It's your superpower.
Oh my god.
Your superpower.
The malic acid.
All right.
All right. So N.
Nectarines and Napa cabbage, not together.
No, that's that.
Just happens to be two N's.
Oh, nectarines make me happy.
Yeah, and again, nothing wrong with just eating them.
When I was a little kid, I was like, oh, they're peaches with and without hair.
That's awesome.
I love nectarines.
I think, and Napa cabbage is something that I like to serve with my crab cakes. We just julienne it and very simply mix it with mayonnaise, whole grain mustard, a little bit of lemon juice, and salt and pepper. It just makes the combination for a crab cake.
It's also the only really nice summer cabbage.
I mean,
the other
Napa
stuff
cabbage.
Is not the same.
Oh my gosh, there's so many things you can do with it. It makes a ton of good salads.
Any kind of like
that's good for you.
Quickie slaw with peppers for any kind of fried something, fried soft shell, or, you know.
Napa cabbage.
Great stuff.
Yummy.
In my series, because of my needs to have patterns, you know, that's so another bad word, nugget.
Oh.
It's like, why is, please don't describe food as nugget.
No.
You can also put chunk on that list. Yeah, please don't describe food as chunk.
Should never be in front of food. Food. Right.
And I think.
Nugget.
when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, Cindy and I will attempt to finish the alphabet. Miraculous for our back to school special on WYPR.